parents can hear me.
Welcome to the Grateful Shows podcast. Long-form reviews exploring the world of Grateful Dead live shows through history, philosophy, fiction, and poetic meditations. I'm your guide, host, and author, JY Pod, asking you to join me as we take a step back. This edition of the Grateful Shows podcast takes us back to March 19th, 1986, a Wednesday night at the Hampton Coliseum in Hampton, Virginia. We'll do the first set this episode, and then feel free to join us next episode for the second set. Shall we go? Grateful Shows Tour Book 2, Show Number 1, a meditation on the Hampton Coliseum, Hampton, Virginia, Wednesday, March 19th, 1986. The Return of the Mothership. Set 1. Hell in a Bucket. Spring arrives, not with the sorrowful bleat of a lamb laboring along the slaughter line, but with the roar of a proud March lion sweeping into town on the heady exhaust of the Grateful Dead, projecting motorcycle dreams and diaries. To hell in a bucket with the whole lot of you, getting off on the whammy bar like that. Sloppy, poppy playing, but who cares about timing when America's biggest party is in town? Phil leaves decisive footprints. Bobby commands his own space. Jerry is everywhere, and the uninitiated among us are left with no choice but to accept whatever shenanigans the band has planned. It certainly doesn't feel like they've got a plan, though. It's all helter-skelter, blood on the walls, and a schizophrenic stab at whatever sticks at the wall. Don't pretend to be one of those people who test spaghetti's doneness by throwing it at the wall. You'll never get that perfect al dente texture with that shoddy plan. Speaking of shoddy, my God, this is a mess. As messy as a toddler in a high chair with a big bowl of cold spaghetti. Sauce was all over his face, hair, the tray, and the floor. Like a scene from Carrie, he grins an impossible grin of self-satisfaction. The mess is his, and you will clean it up. The band has some cleanup to do, too. This tune is a mess, and they are not getting it exactly perfect. The drummers are just hammering away at us with random intent. But they are pushing through the wailings, screams, and overall mayhem to rid the Hampton Coliseum of the cobwebs it has worn since the last time the Grateful Dead played here, nearly a year ago to the day. Stagger Lee. Jerry grins a Stagger Lee with a side of feedback. Drummers back in time as they march up and down the hallways, their finest bangles jingling like the keys of those here to pay off karmic debts. Despite Garcia's scratchy, pained vocals, we're getting into the groove. It's a time to relax, take stock of our situation, and get our psychic papers ready. The man sitting next to us uses his materials to roll some of the finest thoughts this side of the Appalachian Mountains into a large joint, which he offers to the lucky people around him. He's been on the trail so long that he's forgotten about public decorum. Finally, Phil arrives. He was so low in the mix that he barely registered. Maybe that's what was making us so uncomfortable. How can we float free when there's no bottom end to keep us grounded in reality? Shot my Billy dead, now he's got to die. Now that's what we're talking about. And Jerry, as long as he isn't singing, he's fully engaged. Don't underestimate him. Spring on the East Coast, the big guy plays big in big places, and it doesn't get much bigger than Hampton. The tune ends with a sudden thud, which few would call sticking a landing. However, the Colombian judge awarded them a score of 10 for their effort. Rumor has it the fix has been set in exchange for future favorable treatment. Tuning sounds like a Cassidy. Then it doesn't. It sloshes forward like one of those gel-filled wave tanks used as a background prop in a TV detective story. C.C. Rider. Oh, so it's going to be like that, Bob. Nice effort, nice try. We are ready to play along with this facsimile of a blues number. What the hell is wrong with us? The air is tightened around our necks, making it difficult to distinguish a good show from a bad one, a good time from a mediocre one. A fog has settled around our pleasure center. And there's only one way for it to burn off: doldrums, humdrums, and the constant weariness so often found within the average man. Shouts the doctor to the nurse, "Send in the Brent!" Yes, here he comes, with a rotating calliope of sound, which may just have done part of the job. We have a pulse. The show has a pulse. and at least we stand at attention, just in time for Bob to finish us off with some slide histrionics, the companion to his screechy histrionics found in the Hell in a Bucket opener. I just don't know if we can handle it. In that case, we'll have to play dead, as some animals are wont to do. Jerry quickly ends the slide guitar screechathon with a mercy kill. We want blood, and blood we shall have. Finally, some law and order to this blues number. We can see again. The moon is shining bright. The stars are out tonight. And the mothership has landed in the form of some timely fill bombs. Okay. There's still plenty of time to go. How much time, you ask? Enough to savor an equal serving of three shows, both here in Hampton and at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, two hallowed East Coast venues that crackle with energy more often than not. At the very least, they should muster enough energy to shake off any lingering winter doldrums and usher in spring proper, which is only a few hours away. Cold rain and snow. Jerry bends it once, and then again, for good measure. Everyone loves a well-telegraphed cold rain and snow. Phil has officially dug in. His tone methodically tills the earth like a fat nightcrawler. The planting has begun, for the land will become fertile again, ready to produce food for those who care for it properly. Count us in. For those East Coast faithful, going where the chilly winds don't blow is a common March ritual. Running away seems like a good idea in the moment, but waiting until tomorrow will only cause more frustration. Tonight, we choose to face the wind, to take it into our teeth and bite down hard. Spring has begun the cleansing process of Old Man Winter. She has taken him to the river and forcefully pulls his head into the water. He offers little resistance. His icy beard begins to melt, her hands warm around it beneath the crystal clear water. His time is nearly over. He allows the water to fill every pore of his being, surrendering to her will. Piece by piece, he vanishes, only to appear in lands much further to the south. She stands in the stream, coaxing creatures out of their slumber. She is the maiden. It is her time. The earth will grow. The earth will live again as it has since the beginning of existence. Ain't gonna be treated this way? Ain't gonna be treated this way? Neither are we. This year, this season, when young men's minds turn to setlists instead of lovers. It's time to shout it out with all the strength we have. We spit in the name of lovers who've treated us this way in the past, determined never to let it happen again. But we know it's a lie. A weak promise to yourself to keep the shield of indifference, the armor against vulnerability, which is the only way you can truly live with yourself. You are unworthy, insignificant, and destined to run out into the cold rain of snow along countless others, fiercely competing for a simple crumb of sustenance. By the way, what's with the over-the-top effects on Jerry's vocals? It sounds like an insanely loud karaoke party. Slash and burn those abs. The first set isn't even halfway through yet. Now things are heating up. Beat it on down the line. A 10-beat beat it on down the line raises a serious question. Has anyone cracked the beat protocol code? Long ago, in a smoke-filled car far away, a guy from Rockland County hypothesized that the number of beats matched the date played. Since it was his car and most passengers were trying to get to the next show, we agreed passively. But it always bothered us. Moreover, if that's true, then we should have had 19 beats tonight. Instead, we got 10. And what about the number 10? Pythagoras considered 10 the perfect number, representing harmony and the union of the spiritual and the physical. It symbolizes the totality of existence and life's cyclical nature. However, according to Schoolhouse Rock, 3 is a magic number. 3, 6, 9. A man and a woman had a little baby. They had 3 in the family, and that's a magic number. The heart, mind, and body form a trinity that represents all of our existence, as beautifully expressed by the creators of some of our most cherished earworms. So take that, Pythagoras. We trust our sugar-fueled minds more than the wisdom of some ancient Greek philosopher, so we choose 3. We're sticking with the Saturday morning cartoon classic and the prophetic messages on the backs of breakfast cereal boxes. Then again, maybe we just like saying coal mine. Coal mine. There, we said it again. Coal mine. It's amazing how unrestrained freeform dancing can exist against the backdrop of dead-end mining jobs, which is the true power of the Grateful Dead. And inside that power vortex is where we're going to make our happy home. Right here, side rail, 3 rows off of Jerry's side, with a nice view of Brent's cockpit. And no amount of work-related drudgery will be able to wrench us from the spot. Big Railroad Blues. Totally smoking, executed in a no-huddle, short-yardage way. Bobby made it clear he wanted to groove, And now even the most reserved among us is getting down and dirty on the dance floor with a couple of suit-faced coal miners who haven't yet realized Beat It On Down the Line is over. Now you are going to dance like you never have before. Big boots and mall chick hair. We can't even think about it right now. All we know is it's time to party, groove, get into it, and have a whole lot of fun with strangers we haven't even met yet. The world is strange and full of strangers. Still, when Garcia hits that tasty note, we all seem to lift just a little higher, loosening the boundaries between us until they fall away like extra breadcrumbs on the veal cutlet. So say hello to your newest best friend for the next couple of hours. You don't know when you'll need their help, and they don't know when they'll need yours. Names aren't necessary. A knowing glance, a half smile flashed in a millisecond, or a note you both coincidentally enjoy at the same time is enough. It is enough. You now have a friend for life, or at least until the set ends. Boogie on, my friends. Life gives us precious few moments to completely get caught up in what we're doing until the world around us melts away, leaving only the core element, the joy of living, a pulsating force so powerful it attracts like-minded souls from miles away, like an insect zapper set up by the pool. Looks like rain. Bobby cries uncle and drifts into a nice looks like rain, which first references Jerry's cold rain and snow. Make us hurt again and again and again. Skillful show smoother. Now you may look around. Was the stranger you met in the coal mine of loneliness the one you expected? Or are you someone who judges others by their appearance, dismissing the chance that salvation might come in the form of a barefoot spinner who has momentarily lost her way? Too late. She's gone. The tempo slows, and the show becomes introspective, even sad. Now is not the time to run blindly into strangers' arms. It didn't work before. In fact, seeking an empty part of yourself and others only creates a larger dependency that consumes you from within. It's time to face your flaws, lay them out on the bed like you used to do with your clothes the night before a big day at school, the day he would be at his locker. You knew his schedule by heart, but he didn't even know you existed. Is that the game you want to play? Did you play it after you, quote, blossomed? Have you been the one to hold someone down? Were you so insecure that without a short leash, they might never come back? Or were you the one who felt the uncomfortable tug of oppression, the constant monitoring, and the need to check in at random hours? And for what? 20-something years old, but living like a toddler. Bob tells us it's turning gray, the cloud that's followed you your whole life. Give in to the sadness. Jerry pleads with you through a simple upward arching note. We are empowered to move forward right here, right now. The answer lies in the sound of hands clapping in unison. The answers must be inside the hand clap. If not there, then Bob must have the answer. His howls soothe our collective discontent. All of us who hit the musical lottery yet remain lost in love's deep wilderness. There is no way out, so you might as well send your love forward towards the stage. It might even come back. This reflection of love is almost as important as the real thing. Smooth and cool, a beautiful light has descended upon the population of the Colosseum, rocked out, riding the narrow lane of tension. The tune's ending is near, and so is our former self. When we emerge, where will we arrive? The ending comes too soon. Our cocoon of insularity remains impervious. They will never hurt us again. Boil us in water made from tears of the unloved. Take the threads and weave silk if you must. We will always stay as one with our core. Visions of Joanna. Bobby's tune serves as a masterful prelude to Visions of Joanna. It is certainly not boring, a buzzkill, or a filler tune. In fact, for your reporter, this sublime reading enters the pantheon of the truly great Grateful Dead moments. One day, the future may reveal that this moment, not tomorrow night, is the shining moment Deadheads travel far and wide to experience. Of course, everyone is entitled to their opinion, but note that Visions of Joanna is performed only 8 times total, 6 of those during the dying embers of 1995. West Coasters will hear the other version at the BCT in a month, and then that's it. Even the reading next month, which is the final one until 1995 and marks the true end of the line, will be performed at a quicker pace. We get to witness Garcia channel Dylan in the rawest, most intimate form outside the Jerry Garcia band. He has reached into the corpse's throat and pulled out a diamond, a monument built to honor his fellow musical icon of the 60s. It bears a pillar of words inscribed with a song that promises love to two women at once, as some believe Dylan idolizes the love he cannot have right now while with another woman. One wonders if Garcia sings to us and brings us so much joy while thinking of his own darker, private pleasures. Just a guess, but your trusty author is getting some unusually dark vibes from a love song. The dull routine of maintaining a relationship has left us empty and drained. Each day pulls us further into despair. We long to break free and reunite with the one true love, the one who exists solely to release us into the night, to spread our wings and feast on the blood of ungrateful souls. Even that will never happen. Thus, we go on living in perpetual perplexion over Jerry's choice to perform this, if not cryptic, drawn-out and worldly lament of yearning, the meaning of which prompts speculation even among Dylan's most devoted fans. The ghost of electricity howls in the bones of her face. The lyrics of this song are haunting and beautiful, and when Garcia sings them just months before facing his own mortality, they take on a profound meaning. We accept the challenge. We understand the feeling of being with someone while still unable to stop thinking about the one who got away. Are we doomed to live in a constant state of what if, where every action feels artificial? At the same time, we wonder if our indecision is affecting a parallel universe where our doppelganger benefits from our hesitation, possibly leading to a life full of opportunities we're missing out on in our own reality. This is transcendent stuff. It feels as intimate as Jerry in the studio playing Accidentally Like a Martyr. Maybe not everyone present appreciates this moment, but years from now, they might look back and see how fleeting it was. The faithful have been rewarded with the rarest of Jerry gems, ranking just below World to Give on the standard Jerry gem scale. A novella's worth of lyrics to digest, and Jerry nailed it all. Bravo! Music never stopped. 8 notes and everybody's dancing. Bobby's pacing has been perfect this set. He consistently sets up and responds with just the right amount of energy every single time. We know there's no such thing as a perfect set, but as far as the first set of the first show on the East Coast in 1986 goes, they've delivered a solid performance, thoughtfully mixing things up quite nicely. Bobby sometimes oversteps the music, and things are happening faster than we remembered, but we don't feel rushed. The small mistakes remind us that we are human, and there's no better feeling than that. We are alive. The music is flowing, and there's still so much more to come. 11 full sets of music, to be exact. Thank you very much. The clock is almost striking 1, and is still miles from midnight. Welcome to the world as seen through the microscope of a Grateful Dead tour, where time stops to matter, and we are free to be whoever we want, within certain limits, without fear of punishment for living in the past, yet always with an uneasy glance toward the future. Lots and lots of weir just thrashing away wildly, overwhelming Garcia's flurries. Wild abandon and carelessness, when seen metaphorically, represent the contemporary Scylla and Charybdis. It takes a skilled rower to navigate these waters. Do we dare get on board? Hell yes, we do. Surely, a treasure greater than we can imagine is hidden behind the music. We swim, dance, and search for the answer the best we can, but the band is skilled at keeping us at bay. They change the pace from a trot to a full gallop, leaving us breathless, trying to keep up. The end of the set must be near. We can feel it, almost see it. A beautiful city illuminated and jeweled in the valley below. Soon, we will be there. Don't ease me in. Or so we thought. Jerry offers us a final morsel to keep us here until the second set, a genuine bonus to fatten us up to an acceptable level of fandom. Ending with "The Music Never Stopped" still would have been great, but if Jerry wants to give us a benign set closer, then we'll dance about like fools and gladly accept it. Hey, here's a little Brent for you too. Thank you, Brent. We appreciate it. No harm, no foul. And of course, we'll take a 10-song first set, although a third of them clocked in at roughly the same duration as a 45 record spun by an underpaid local DJ. Can't wait for the day job encore. End of set. Thank you so much for choosing to spend time with us here at the Grateful Shows podcast. Be sure to tune in for the second set right here on Grateful Shows. See you next set. If this reading of Grateful Shows has given you something to sit with, I'd be glad to have you along for the rest of the ride. You can listen on whatever platform suits you best. The link is in the show notes. And if you'd like to go deeper, the written work behind these readings will be available as a complete tour book upon finishing the tour. Again, the link is below. A short note on Podchaser would mean a great deal at this early stage of the show's life. And if you'd like to receive occasional communication about the writing and what's coming next, the newsletter sign-up is in the show notes too. Thank you so much for listening.